podcast server of WildGamesProductions.com and D20Radio.com.
Products of your imagination.
You burst through the door, you find a small room filled with golden jewels and a red dragon.
Products of your imagination.
And a red dragon. And a red dragon.
Products of your imagination.
Save or die!
Yeah. Raise them up, raise them up. Zombies all around me, I be hacking them all up.
Products of your imagination.
I be hacking them all up. There's zombies all around me, I be hacking them all up.
Welcome to the Save or Die Podcast, a podcast about classical Dungeons & Dragons.
Die, episode 53. Welcome all. It's DM Mike, along with the rest of the Fab Four. DM Glenn?
Hi, I'm back.
DM Liz?
Hello.
And the pulse-pounding return of DM Crispy.
A podcast bigger than Jesus.
Where'd
our
it go?
Our first episode without DM Vince.
Yeah, we finally got that guy. Out of here. There's a lot more room.
Now we threw him down the steps. Take that, Vince.
At least he set off the pit trap, so, you know.
Yeah, that was nice.
We were able to avoid that. Well, I'll always remember him for that. Anyway. So, what has everybody been doing? Classic D&D-wise. DM Crispy.
Nothing, because... Everyone's too busy, and I don't have a gaming group right now.
You don't have a gaming group?
Not right now. I'm trying to get everyone together.
Oh, I get it. We're number three. Okay, I got it.
What about
whip those people into shape?
Critical wits.
Oh yeah, actually, I've been thinking about I've had everyone knows about my Swords and Wizardry game that I've been talking about for months, but have not been able to start. And I've been thinking about just making it a Skype game, and, the Critical Wits guys will be there. And if anyone else wants to join, email me at criticalwits@gmail.com, and we'll do, a test thing. And I'll probably maybe do another Save or Die AP podcast.
Okay.
That would be cool.
Yeah. Because, I mean, Swords and Wizardry, it'll have, the rest of the Critical Wits guys, but it's, this is our territory here on SOG.
Yeah. It's
but what about Labyrinth Lord?
You know what? I looked through Labyrinth Lord last night, and I just do not like it as much as I like Swords and Wizardry. I don't know. There's just some...
You're so fickle.
I am. My gaming habits, they change all the time.
And we all know we can only play one game, version of any game ever.
I was gonna maybe do a second edition Birthright game, but I'm like, well, if I do that, then I can't play Swords and Wizardry.
No, because only one game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can't play them at one time, but yeah,
you could.
It would be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, they did at the con.
Oh, that round robin thing, you mean?
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Went from Starfeteers to Boot Hill to Cave Master.
And that went from yeah, that's great, to what is this?
Yeah. I kind of wish we had managed to get to it, but we bailed that morning because Ben made me drink too much. So it's
yeah,
all
he
his
made
fault.
You.
He made me.
Oh, I
saw it.
Yep.
They
so what
forced
you been
the beer pong down his throat.
You did.
You put what? You stuck what down his throat?
The beer bong.
Oh,
the beer.
God.
So what you been up to, Glenn?
Oh, I've been working on a little audio clip here of Vince's voice. So every once in a while, I hit the button. It'll say, "Shut up, Glenn."
let's hear it.
Yeah.
We'll edit it in post.
No, what I've been doing, we went out to a national forest, and we got to play some role-playing out there with my grandson. Been doing the Saturday D&D game, basic D&D, yay.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because I had not heard about that until a couple, last week on the forums. Uh-huh. I was like, hey, why don't we go back to every Saturday?
Uh-huh.
And Glenn's like, no, I've got an RC game now that I play in.
I fought for this game, and I want Yeah, that was kind of fluke. Odinist is the DM on that, if you know him from Dragon's Foot. And I think he's on OSR Gaming, too. And we've been running through RC stuff. We ran through Quest for the Silver Sword, or we're getting ready to run through Quest for the Silver Sword. And, you know, I'm on my third character, but, you know, I didn't know it was that deadly.
Yeah, you know, that's like the first time I played Swords and Wizardry at Neon Con, which I never got to talk about.
Uh-huh.
My first elf character, face eaten by ghouls. So, you know, it happens.
But that's the beauty of classic D&D.
Yeah.
Just slap another character together and go. Yeah.
And then I played in I think it was Thorkir Leaf's, like, OSR community game.
Uh-huh.
And my elf character roasted to death by dragons. So I'm two for two.
Now I know what they call
you
Crispy.
I played.
Now I know why they call you Crispy. But when I first started this group, we're still in Thunder Rift, and eventually we're going to come out somewhere in Mystara. I have no idea where, but I'm having a lot of fun. And I want to do a shout out and a thank you to Mike Brewington of Bloomington, Indiana, and also Mr. Maslowski, who runs Grognardia indirectly, for sending me a copy of Top Ballista. Contacted me out of the blue. He says, do you want it? I was going to put it on eBay. I said, sure. He sent it to me on his own dime, and I've got it. It's complete with the map.
Woo-hoo.
And thank you very much, Mike.
That is cool.
And now, gnomes in basic. Yes!
Nostal. Nostal gnomeses.
He
hates them.
And do it, Thakos Hammer, and that's about what I've been doing. How about you, Mike? What you up to?
I've been writing a thesis, or rewriting a thesis,
oh,
I should
man.
Say. That's
oh, boy.
Ended up over 100 pages, too, which was
ouch.
What are you writing
twice the size I expected it to be.
What's your dissertation?
Or thesis. Yeah, I do plan to expand it into a dissertation.
Vince versus 2E?
No, it's an overview of invasion literature from turn of the century, pre-World War I, and its influences.
I mean, like
society.
That sounds
you
really
mean like,
cool, actually.
You like H.G. Wells and stuff like that?
Mm-hmm. You know, basically the evil underpants nation are going to invade and take us over, and here's what amounts to what we would call today science fiction.
Yeah, so not alien invasion, but invasions from neighboring countries.
Ah, mm-hmm. Okay.
Or the yellow peril, which they're always and distressingly fond of talking about. Even Jack London got into the bit where he had a nice little story that ended happily with the mass genocide of the Chinese race and white people occupying China as a new colony.
Did you get into any like, sex roamer?
No. But it's like, wow, I now like Jack London a lot less.
I'm sorry.
He considers that a happy
Jack London
ending.
Write, like White Wolf or whatever.
White Fang, yeah.
White Fang, yeah.
And some other People of the Abyss and
isn't
some
that,
other
isn't
stuff.
That book for kids.
Uh-huh. Yeah, he was but it was just such a weird time. You know, people had ridiculous ideas. I mean, you know, judging intellect by the shape of your skull. That was a science.
Yeah. Like
but anyway,
the first IQ tests were just super racist.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But anyway, that's what I've been doing, unfortunately. And other than reading, you know, Oubliette and a couple of the usual blogs I go to, I haven't been able to get involved with anything. But now that this is under my hat, I can now return to my PhD work, which I had to leave for a little bit. And I can actually get back to running some stuff, which would be nice.
Yay.
Cool.
Which Liz will be thrilled for.
Yes.
Hooty-hoo. Hooty-hoo. Liz, what have you been doing while he's been hitting the books?
She's been formatting my stuff to Turabian style.
Yeah, so I did not get out of this.
But why do the Arabs want it?
Turabian. Named after Kate Turabian. So it's a format much like Chicago Manual of Style.
or MLA.
That sort of thing.
I thought it was the Turabian Nights or something.
No, no. Sorry, but no. So I've been formatting all of his stuff and getting to read it at the same time, and, you know, I've got a big interest in that time period myself, so it was actually kind of fun, you know, reading over his thesis and making the editorial changes and stuff.
Even though I was rough on the Italians.
Yeah, well, I'm used to that. Nobody
Whoa.
Likes the Italians.
Whoa, guys. Oh, okay, you meant like that. All right.
Yes, yes.
Shut up, Crispy.
I'm sorry.
No, you're not.
I couldn't resist.
Shut up, Glenn.
What?
Now to emails. Why don't you... Do we have any emails, Liz?
Yes, we do. But before we get to them, I was going to also say that in addition to doing that, we also got a lovely, lovely Marvin the Mage picture by cartoonist Jim Wampler.
Yay!
You can see it on his website.
Mention that. How can I forget that?
Yeah. Anyway, you can see it on his Marvin the Mage website, www.mudpuppycomics.com. And it's a great little one panel of Marvin the Mage basically promoting Save or Die podcast. Jim was nice enough to give us a very high resolution version of the image that he has allowed us to use to, you know, put as t-shirt art.
Oh, man.
So I am hoping that we can get that onto our Zazzle page fairly quickly, because I seriously want one of those t-shirts.
I want one of those t-shirts too. I'm going to PAX next month. Like, I'm going to meet up with Will from RFI.
And, oh, like, cool.
It'll be cool to have two WGPRN guys, you know, hanging out. And I want to wear Zod t-shirts and, like, RFI.
Wear your colors.
Yeah. Be like, hey guys, I was really excited when you had shared the news with us about the illustration. Like, I showed all my friends. I was just like, this is the coolest thing ever. Somebody this completely independent of us, like, asked.
Yeah. We didn't even ask them or anything. It's like, yes!
This guy likes our show so much that he...
Well, like, he's classic. He plays with Jim Kask in his games.
Yeah, so. I was reading some of that. Yeah.
So was he at North Texas?
He was not, but he's been talking about, you know, trying to get there next year. So I hope he does. It would be great to meet him.
I should try to go next year, since
you
all
should.
Of you guys go.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, you should.
Dwayne Oz.
We'll have a big Save or Die room party or something.
Yeah. Woohoo!
I'll bring all the
books.
So, anyway.
Okay.
That was my thing that I wanted to mention, and now we will get to the email.
And a very good thing it was, too.
Definitely.
Why don't you get to the email? Go ahead.
Get to the email! Do it now!
Do it again!
Anyway.
All right.
And my boss said you got some emails for us. Go ahead.
I think Glenn's speaking in tongues.
He is speaking in Brando.
He's getting all gangster on us.
He's going to read us an email. We can't refuse.
Word up, homie.
Anyway,
this is a pimp. Go ahead.
Our first email.
Yes.
Is teacher. From Angry Monk. And if you don't let me read it, he will be even angrier.
Yes, Mrs. Stewart.
Angry Monk says, "Hey guys, just working my way through your wonderful podcasts. Vince and Crispy mentioned that they were going to put up podcasts of the various modules. Found the first part of X1. Just wondered if this was still a go. On another note, I noticed that DM Vince is stepping back from the show. Say it ain't so, Vince! Now, I'm not an expert D&Der, first edition and Moldvay, mostly. But is it a matter of needing a hand coming up with show ideas? Needing more hosts? I just feel like all of you guys have been doing the heavy lifting, and I've just been sitting back eating pizza and drinking beer. Is there something that the fans of the show can do to keep this wonderful podcast going?
So I'm like, that's
help.
A bad thing. Sitting back and eating pizza and drinking beer.
I want to help, but I don't want to presume. I just don't want to see a good thing die, as the king once said. Thanks for all of the stuff you do, the angry monk. Shannon
thank
Ferguson.
You. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Well, what the fans could do is keep listening.
And if you have any ideas for episodes or segments, send it to our email. You will not be presumptuous. We can't guarantee that we'll use it, but we'll certainly give it weight.
Mm-hmm.
And
Vince will show up every once in a while. Or so he threatens anyway.
Yeah. He's not completely gone. He'll hit in every now and then, just tell Glenn to shut up.
Yeah, and you know, afterwards we pull out the Lysol and we're fine.
Anyway.
So just before we move on from that, okay, so X1 module. X1. Or it's actually was it X1 or X2? It's X2, it's Castle Amber. X1
Amber.
Yeah. X1 is like my favorite module ever. But X2 and
Dread.
I love Violet Dread. It's so good. Anyways. So that game ended on episode 2 with the TPK.
I remember that.
Yeah. It was a good moment.
You could run it again with Swords and Wizardry.
If you go to osrgaming.org, that's our forum, slash forums, there is a section called OSR Actual Play Podcasts. And there's a topic titled X2 Castle Amber Part 1 Save or Die Actual Play, for some reason. On page 5, the last page, about 3 or 4 or 5 or something posts down, there's actually a synopsis, because someone else had asked about this on the forums. Basically, there's an archway filled with that drips blood, and Leaf wrapped his rope around that and pulled it down, and it was an artifact, so I did a retributive strike, and it killed all of them.
Yep.
Blackleaf, no!
So, I wrote out the synopsis of what had happened in my, point of view. And, so that's up there, if you want to go read that. I guess we could probably maybe put a link in the show notes.
It's your player's fault.
It was. I wasn't going to stop them. I had asked if that's really what they do, and they said yes.
So you gave them the code.
Yeah.
Do you really want to do that?
And they were like, yeah. So I'm like, all right.
Okay.
And I've long since forgiven Crispy for this, but I had no part in this decision. I just wanted to let you know about that.
Yeah. I left that out because I didn't want to make anyone I didn't want to give any colored perspectives or anything like that. But yeah, Glenn had to step away. And I actually thought you were back. But
I know. But that's why I said I was a little mad, but I got over it real quick because it wasn't your fault. It was my son's fault, my stepson's fault. So
I still think it was the whole thing was hilarious.
Oh yeah. I think it was fine,
and it was it was the perfect way for that game to end.
Yes.
It happens.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was good. It was fine. Now, did we have another email?
We have one more email. From Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
Hello.
And Patrick says, I'm just listening to adventure number 51, a little behind, I know, and I paused to check out the YouTube video mentioned by Rust. Cool trip down memory lane. What I wanted to mention, though, is that I noticed the video was posted by author Ethan Gilsdorf. I first heard of him on RFI a couple of years ago.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I had actually seen that video prior to you guys talking about it on the show, and they're like Ethan Gilsdorf, and
yeah,
I've read his book.
Yeah, he wrote that book. Yeah.
Anyway, Patrick goes on to mention that says his book Fantasy Freaks
and
Gaming
Geeks
mm-hmm.
is well worth reading for the OSR crowd.
And it really is. It's mm-hmm. a very good book.
It basically tells the story of how, after being an avid gamer into his teens, he came back as an adult after leaving the hobby behind for 20-some years. It's a cool story. I just thought I'd mention the connection in case someone hasn't already. And we had not, so thank you.
No.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
That totally slipped past me.
Yeah, I knew, but I wasn't on that episode.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, Crispy knows everything.
I do. It's true.
He knows everything when he's not here to say it.
It's not my fault. I have other things going on.
He was
you
busy
have
correct
life. How dare
he was,
you?
He was busy correcting the internet.
Yeah. So science.
Yeah.
You know, somebody on the internet was wrong, and Crispy was there.
Well, thanks for bringing that up because yeah, I've read that book, and it's probably the best. I won't say a non-gamer because obviously he is a gamer, mm-hmm. but it's the best book I have read of writing about the gaming fandom in a way that quote unquote non-gamers would understand.
When
yeah, it was
that,
really good.
When
yeah.
did that book get, when did that book come out?
2000 I want to say late 2009 early 2010 because I was still working at Borders when
okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well there was still Borders when it came out.
Yeah.
And we had about a bajillion copies of it, but I would read it on my breaks. It's very, very good. I yeah. highly recommend it.
And he doesn't just deal with RPGs. He deals with LARPing, Lord of the Rings, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Harry Potter tribute bands.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't he go, like, it's Harry, is Harry and the Potters the one that he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
Those guys are actually pretty cool.
Are they?
Yeah, they know, the guy whose music we took for Critical Wits, the intro and outro music, knows those guys.
Ah, okay.
So.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's our email bag. Thanks for writing. And if people want to write us in, they can email us where, Glenn?
Saber.podcast@gmail.com.
Write us today.
Or now, go on OSR Gaming and tell us how we're wrong.
Yeah, or go on the forums. You can do that, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move into Game On, then.
Okay! Game On! Game On!
Game On!
Game On!
So what are we talking about this episode?
This episode, we're talking about role-playing game magazines, whether that's fanzines, e-zines, old dragons, old white dwarfs. You know, in the internet age, we've gotten used to having everything at our fingertips on the internet. You want to see somebody wants a new class, they just put it up on a blog, you know, if they want to share it with people, et cetera, et cetera.
Lolcats, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know that class. Is that human only?
You don't want to.
Or is that elf?
You don't want to.
Okay. So anyway, I thought we could talk about some of the magazines, e-zines or whatever that you've come across. And since this is Game On, we talk about things kind of from a player perspective. I thought we would start off talking about classes.
Okay.
Has there been any particular zines or classes that have shown up that you found particularly useful to play? I don't mean as a DM to allow in your game. I mean to play.
I'll go first. The Alternate Bard from Dragon 56 and Best of Dragon number 3. It's also in that one.
Ah.
Because it's just, you know, first edition Bard with your multi-classing and your like, level range of when you can actually become a bard. It's just, I don't know, I never quite liked it. I like that this has a first
dare we
level.
Say prestige class?
Prestige class. Oh, that's a dirty word in the OSR.
Well, this alternate bard was like the precursor to the 2E bard, wasn't it?
No, I think it's a little more powerful than the 2E bard. I've looked at the 2E bard once or twice, and I just was never really that impressed. It never really, like, made me want to play a bard.
Aha, uh-huh. Okay.
And, like, I've played quite a few bards in my time, mind you, but...
Okay.
So I'm gonna pull that up while you guys talk amongst yourselves.
Glenn?
You know, Chili Peppers burn my guts. Sorry, I had to pull that one out again. Every time he says, like, never mind. I'm gonna be a wimp on this and say the Ranger from Strategic Review 2.
Yeah,
I've been a big Ranger fan ever since I started playing D&D or AD&D, and
I love the flexibility of the Ranger. I'm glad they added it to the game, and that's my fate.
Liz?
I don't really remember any of the NPC classes from the old Dragons that particularly stood out for me. I remember a lot of the really cool, you know, races and stuff that came out from the Dragon magazines, and, you know, I've definitely got favorites for that, but, you know, there's just nothing specifically that I remember seeing, and, you know, I really want to do that.
Well, what races jumped out at you? Or race?
Well, the very first Dragon that I ever picked up was issue number 51. And the race that was in that one, the Winged Folk,
that just
really stuck with me ever since then. And, you know, maybe part of it's the nostalgia factor of that was the first Dragon I ever got, but that's just always been a favorite.
Yeah, I liked them too, and I used to use them a lot. I'd have characters whenever the DM would let me on occasion like that, although I kept thinking of them like the Hawkmen from Flash Gordon.
Yeah, I kind of remembered that too.
Brian Blessed.
I said, yeah.
Great booming voice.
So, and what about you?
My class, you know, maybe we ought to say that perhaps the high watermark of Dragon was in the 50s, because my favorite class to play was in issue 52, the Bounty Hunter.
Uh-huh.
That's an NPC class, isn't it?
Well,
technically, they called all of them NPC classes.
Yeah.
See, Crispy, what were we talking about?
Yeah. Before the show, Glenn and I were talking about this. I was doing my notes.
We both hate NPC classes.
Yeah, note our least favorite and why, as a player, not as a DM, is the note, so I was not going to use it. But I hate the NPC classes. Why do they have EXP requirements? It's like...
You know why? Would you like to know why?
I would love to know why.
Tim Cass told me. They wanted to publish classes, but they weren't going to spend the time to try to figure out how balanced they were. So to cover their butts, they published them as NPC classes, but they knew very well people were going to play them.
Exactly. Well, why don't they just come out and say they're PC classes, we haven't balanced them, caveat emptor, you know? Yeah.
Because come on, guys, you've been on the internet.
Yeah.
People always complain.
Yeah.
I mean, Dragon has, like, all the NPC classes. Is that four? I think it's four. Let me check.
I'm going to be ranting on this on my show, too, because... They did it late in 2E that I did. I really didn't like it.
I didn't mind it at all.
You call a horse a horse.
Or not, you know, if you don't like them, don't allow them.
Oh, I know that, but they really should have put them out in the first place. But that's for Thaco's Hammer, never mind.
Yeah, like in my notes, I had put that it seems like they were supposed to be PC classes, but like maybe they were scrapped. Or something?
No, they were covering their butts, that's all. I was told that by Tim Kask, so.
Yeah. That's like telling a player not to look in the, not to have a DMG or look in it.
Well,
held together, didn't it?
Yeah, I remember, like, Vince was talking about that on one of the shows, and I'm just, like, I wanted to respond with just, the only thing that's stopping, like, any player from looking in the DMG, it doesn't matter if they're separate books, the only thing that's gonna save the game, or save that player from looking in that book, is his will to not look in it. Like, his want to have that.
That's why we were arguing about he doesn't like the RC, saying, well, everything's in there, the players can see the monster stats and all that stuff. Yeah, like, if you split them into two books, it's going to stop them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I think that might have been, like, that conversation, but I wasn't there for that. I had to listen to it.
I know.
Back
I'm
to classes.
Saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you see... since Liz got us talking about races, did any races stand out to you guys?
Not particularly. And I will definitely come out and say that I'm not a huge, like, Dragon magazine reader.
I was about to say, we're not limited to Dragon here.
Yeah.
We're
talking
about all sorts of things.
Well, if that's the thing, then Kobold Quarterly, number, like, 14, has an alternate spell with Ranger for Pathfinder that is, like...
Really?
Super good, yeah. You get precision damage, and you do all this
that you
crazy
can,
stuff.
Can or have played in classic D&D.
Like, when you put it like that, then...
This is a critical myth, that way.
Fine, Mike.
Christy,
then I rescind my answer and go back to my original answer of not particularly.
Not particularly. Glenn?
Ditto for basic. Okay. Look, I try to keep everything on basic, so.
Well,
yeah.
Glenn, like, what? Who put this knife in my back?
Jeez. What did I give you, a ring? Wait a minute.
It's a crispy slaying knife. It's got a +9 against crispies.
You're not there.
I'm getting drunk. Well, this isn't a class or race, but I must admit one of the articles that I found of use, again, getting back to Dragon, was Dragon number 104.
Yeah?
Which gave a lot of detail about that vague thing of thieves' tools.
Yeah.
Had an article in there that actually gave you, okay, here's an example of what is in a set of thieves' tools.
Oh, wait a minute. Are you talking about an article here or a class? Or
article. I already said my class. Anyway, because I can't count the number of games I've played in where it's like, well, I've got thieves' tools. And the DM goes, well, you know, that's just lockpicks. And I was like, well, it doesn't say lockpicks. It says thieves' tools.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you're going to tell me they don't have a little crowbar in there? Well, no. You have to specifically bet. Well, then it's not thieves' tools, is it?
Yeah, like a tiny little pry bar or like a bent hook for, like, going on the...
latches.
I can speak English. Like latches and the creases in doors, maybe looking like traps or...
marbles,
wires,
a bottle grease,
of wine,
a tiny, tiny bottle of water that you can pour out.
Grease to, you know,
wax,
lubricate.
A magnifying glass.
Yep. Yeah, little things like that. What's there, what isn't? And that was
a tiny bottle of Crown. I don't know why they put it in there, but just do.
So that's my article. And again, it's Dragon Magazine, but you know.
Now, but do they help or hinder the play? I think they could do both.
I think they help. However, the DM has got to, because this is a player issue. Because players will find anything they can to try to give them that edge.
Right.
So I think they can help if the players come to me and say, you know, look, I've got this thing that I want to run in. You know, the game, this article, can I use it? I probably look it over, but I like the initiative when players do that.
Right. Yeah, as long as the DM, you are very firm and say, don't come to me in the game saying I want to use this. And then we wind up getting into an argument in the middle of, you know, gameplay as to whether or not you can have, you know, fill in the blank, and,
right,
you know, that just makes everything come to a grinding halt.
Right.
It's on my character sheet.
Did I see the character
in
sheet?
In tiny, tiny letters on the back of the sheet. It says Empire.
And then
underneath it says, has lightsaber.
Zarg. Ah, yes.
Jedi vampire.
Bleh. Bleh, bleh.
Bleh.
The world of dimness.
That's your feelings. You know it to be true.
The next trilogy of Star Wars.
Let me see your deck, my friend.
Star Wars Twilight.
No.
Oh, no sparkling Jedi. No.
I thought the Star Wars
Jedi,
saga couldn't get any worse,
sparkle.
But...
maybe it could. Any other articles people want to talk about or want to just move into DM's Workshop?
Why are we moving to DM Workshop?
Yeah.
I'll just move
at least a favorite article in as a player with, like, class and whatnot. I wanted to say that I know it's on the DMing side and we're in-game on, but about articles helping or hindering, I think it depends. I don't like using them. I don't like bringing a lot of material in from magazines because it makes me feel like I'm beholden to allowing more things from the magazine in the future, kind of like Mike with the Gazetteers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to be beholden to these rules that I don't want to read.
I see. Yeah. I could see that.
Well, if you don't want to read them, that's the decision right there.
Yeah. But if it's like, oh, but you allowed this other thing.
Yeah, it's like if you allow one, then it's, yeah, you do have to watch that, because then it's,
yeah, well, what
they
part
just
of
assume
my...
anything in Dragon is now available, or White Dwarf, or, no, that's not
what,
the case
at all. Yeah, but what part of, because I'm the DM, don't you understand?
It's not that simple, though. Like,
I could make it that simple.
Yeah, Glenn, you're such a hard ass.
Yeah.
Anyway, I would say from a player perspective, my least favorite article is critical hit and miss tables.
Ah, thank you, Mike.
God, I hate those. I hate them, hate them, hate them.
I also do not like critical hits and misses.
Because I usually roll fumbles when I'm playing. Liz can attest, when I'm DMing, I roll great, but when I'm a player... I can't hit the broadside of a barn.
I know that feeling.
I'm kind of the opposite. Like, well, not the opposite. I don't know. I have weird luck. I once won a war game through sheer luck.
Really?
Yeah. It was. I was outnumbered, out-strategized, and I would get like a good move, and they'd be like, "Oh, you just need a this to hit," and then I would roll like my defense roll, and somehow every time I would roll these amazing.
Wasn't Amazing. Or was it?
I think it was Battlejack.
Ah.
That's what it was. It was like a skirmish, like, mech war game.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was fun. It's the only time I ever played a war game, and I won through luck.
Ah. Huh. So, least favorite articles, Liz, Glenn? Liz, first?
Ain't got one.
Liz?
Mm. Oh, fiction. Can I say fiction?
Are we still in Game On, or are we still in,
We're still in Game On.
All right. Least favorite article as a player.
I mean, if you can't, you can't. That's no problem. We'll just move on.
Well, the articles that tend to come to mind that I did not particularly care for go back to the various types of NPC classes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember NPC classes that I definitely did not like, but I never remembered any that really stood out as being, wow, that's cool. Yeah, the
duelist. Jester, what? Why is that a class?
NPC some or otherwise.
Some of those were meant to be kind of jokes, I will say that, but some of the ones that were obviously meant to be serious, you know, just kind of... I don't know, left me cold. Like, say there was this one, I think it was called the Encantatrix, which was supposed to be a female-only subclass of the magic user.
That's so stupid.
It was dumb! And
Encantatrix.
Encantatrix.
So, oh, yeah, she would be able to take spells out of her opponent's head and throw them at him.
Oh. Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
And Cantatrix is the mascot for my death metal band.
Excellent.
God. She'll take music from other bands. And on that tragic, awkward note, let's go to DM's workshop.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. But this isn't science. It's more like black magic. Better. Stronger. Faster.
Oh, yeah. It's all coming together. Welcome to the Dungeon Master's Workshop.
DM's Workshop. Now we get behind the screen.
Yes.
Articles, etc.
For the DM.
So, favorite article from a magazine.
Yeah, as a DM.
Glenn, what do you think?
I think I've got, since I don't have a least favorite article, I have two favorites. One is Dragon number 184, the 7-sentence NPC. That changed my life as far as like describing things or people.
Which issue was that from again?
That is Dragon number 184.
Okay.
And for the handiest article, I would nominate Dragon number 191, Different Totes for Different Folks. They actually have equipment packages for the different classes in basic D&D. So if you guys are like, okay, I'm almost done. I just got to pull my equipment. Here's a cleric kit. Write it down. Let's go. You can catch up with the rest of it later.
What issue was that?
That's Dragon number 191. We use that in the RC game we're running. We use that all the time. I gave it a copy to my DM. He loves it.
I have to look at that. That sounds pretty cool, actually.
Me too.
Anything that helps speed up play is good.
Mm-hmm. It's got a list of equipment on there and costs for things that aren't in the book or the books. Plus, they've got these equipment packages. One for a fighter, one for a thief, one for a cleric, magic user, you know, that kind of thing, dwarf, elf, whatever. So, yeah, it's the handiest article I've ever had.
That's something that they started doing in 3.5. Like, every class would have a starting equipment guide.
Uh-huh.
Like, half-elf ranger, and you'd get your bow and, like, your bedroll and water skin and stuff like that.
Oh, and the best part is, since there's no free ride, there's no free lunch, it gives you the cost and gold pieces of each package.
Well, yeah, naturally. Yeah. Okay. Crispy, what about you?
I have three or four favorite articles. My favorite article is Runes from Dragon number 69, page 7. Okay. It's a look at ancient, like, real-life ancient
69? Excellent. Yeah, I remember that issue, actually, when it came out.
Yeah, the following article is about dwarven runes. It's written by Ed Greenwood. I didn't like that one so much, or some kind of rune language. But it takes Scandinavian runes, and it shows you how they're written in Germanic and like, different Norse cultures and stuff like that. And it gives the breakdown of their alphabets. And then it also gives an example of a phonetic English version that you can use in games as a writing system. And it breaks down the most common phonemes from the English-speaking language, which is really cool. It's you know, linguistic stuff, and I'm just like, oh, man, this is the greatest thing ever.
That's
one of the
thing.
biggest mistakes I did was actually I came up with the alignment languages as of law, neutral, and chaos.
No. Michael,
wrote things.
No.
Yeah, really. What's worse, I made, since it was basic, you know, there's no casting time, so instead I basically had the character or the player have to read the name of the spell in the language, and if they couldn't do it right, then that was a miscast.
Oh, no. That's brutal.
That was brutal and dumb, and I wish I'd never done it. All I could say is I was 13.
Yeah. Oh, you... you don't want to see my first character when I was 13. It's pretty bad.
It was bad of me. Bad, bad.
And then I really like the Deck of Many... It's not really an article. It's a handout that comes in Dragon 148, which is a Deck of Many Things. It's an actual deck.
I have a PDF for that.
Mm-hmm. I have the physical copy with the Deck of Many Things still in it, intact. And that's never getting punched out.
Ever.
and then the final one is Gandalf was only a 5th level magic user.
I remember that.
Page 22, because that changed everything about how I look at how magic works and how NPC levels and the power of the world really works. And it also puts, like, the examples that they give about him using altered forms of, like, pyrotechnics or fireball really helped change the way I think about magic in the books as being templates for spells rather than just, like, these are concrete spells.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can have fireball, and maybe this mage's fireball is titled something else, but it's essentially the effects of fireball.
Right.
But that's it for me.
All right. Elizabeth?
Well, mine's my favorite, also an Ed Greenwood article. This was from issue 74, I think. Seven Swords, Blades of the Realms. And it's basically seven different magic swords. And if I recall correctly, you know, it was still during, you know, first edition AD&D at the time, but you were kind of getting a look at some of his, what was going to be Forgotten Realms in second edition.
Uh-huh.
So it was Forgotten Realms before it was 2E.
Well, he did put out Forgotten Realms just before 2E, so uh-huh. there is a 1E version of it.
Yeah.
It's right at the tail end, but yeah.
So you've got seven swords, and, you know, they're all very, very different. You get complete descriptions, and it's something, I love magic items, so I like to have something that, you know, isn't going to come straight out of, you know, the standard books that the players have access to, that's, you know, going to be a little bit different and not really expected.
Plus one sword, plus two against Toe Jam. Yeah, yeah, I can agree with that, definitely.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a nice one. What about you, Mike?
I've got three. Only one is from Dragon.
Huh. Really?
The first one is from Footprints number 6, which is the e-zine for dragonsfoot.org.
Oh, I forgot about Footprints.
Yeah. It was an article.
Sorry, Dragon's Foot.
It was an article by Lynn LaKafka
uh-huh.
called Liaman's Scarves. And I thought those were great. And I've tried to use those in as many games as I can reasonably get away with. These are like little scarves, magic scarves, and you set them out, and they're a fire. Or a hole in the ground. Or you undo it and then there's a picnic dinner already on it.
Oh, that's cool. That's a cool magic item.
I mean, it's minor, but yet it's got some nifty stuff to it, depending on the color of the scarf. And
really magical, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they look fabulous.
Oh, of course.
Anyway, that is Footprints, issue 6. It's free. Go over to dragonsfoot.org. It's a good little thing.
I used to wear the red button fireball, but it really clashed with my outfit, so I got the blue one now.
You know, I heard that about you, Glenn.
I heard that about me, too.
All right. For White Dwarf Magazine, 56, back when they were doing predominantly D&D and not before they became basically a house organ for Games Workshop, they did an article. I'm not sure I agree with all the way the author put everything in this campaign world up, but he basically came up with, dare I say, a basic basic expert version, D&D version, of the Belgariad campaign world from David Eddings' series. Including how to do the magic, some of the monsters, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm familiar with Dave Eddings' books just from working in a bookstore. Or actually, them.
Yeah, I like him. Some of the old schoolers poo-poo him because he's not grim and dark. And
too bad.
He's not Robert E. Howardian. You know, good guys tend to end up winning, you know.
Characterization is great. Character interaction, you know, that's one of my favorite parts about the David Eddings novels. Mm-hmm. That being said, if you've read the Belgariad, you've read them all. He uses the more or less the same overarching story idea for the Malorian, which is the five-part series that comes after that.
Gotcha.
And
the Elenium and
Timothy.
On the other hand, you know, it's also very iconically D&D, if you think about it. Band of heroes facing great evil, destroy the world with big MacGuffin.
Wash and repeat.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
I was just going to say, because the characterization and character interaction is so good, I'm willing to read what's essentially the same plot over and over again.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I like that. I'm leery of running campaign worlds set in already extant fictional worlds like Lord of the Rings or this, but I think he came up with some nifty ideas on how to handle magic and such, which was kind of different than the standard D&D thing. And again, getting to Dragon Magazine, issue 50, there is one adventure called The Chapel of Silence, which I really, really like. I would run it far more often, except Liz usually plays, and she has already played in it, so can't run it often.
You should start a Skype game, and I'll come play.
Okay. Now that I have copious amounts of free time, we'll see. But those are my favorites.
Cool.
Who haven't we covered? Did we cover everybody?
I think so.
Did we cover you, Glenn? I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. That's right, we did. Okay.
Very much so.
All right.
So, let's head on to random encounters.
Oh, wait. Were we doing least favorite or favorite? Because we still haven't done least favorite.
Oh, well, that's true.
I do not have a least favorite. Unless we get back to those stupid NPC classes.
Yeah.
Well, this is as a DM as opposed to being a player. And I do not like... For every good, I thought, NPC class they had in there, they usually had two or three that were either totally whacked archer ranger or so darn specialized that, okay, you know... A duelist fighting one on one, he's going to win. But you know, other than that, he's not that useful.
Mm-hmm. For me, anytime, and it showed up in three old school magazines that I know of: White Dwarf, Dragon, and Obliet. The Barbarian. I've never seen the Barbarian done correctly, in my opinion.
I've never felt that the Barbarian was a class.
It was more of
almost a race, really.
I would think just a type of fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that.
It's more, I don't know, I don't think it should be a class. It's kind of an outlook on life.
Right. At most, you know, he knows a lot of outdoorsy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You have rangers in your game, then he could be a ranger, maybe.
Yeah.
But other than that, don't worry about it. Glenn, least favorite?
No, not really, except for what you named, of course, NPC classes. Either side of the screen, I don't like them.
Ain't in the book, you don't want to hear it.
Yeah, if it ain't in my circle of what I want to use, I don't want to hear it.
Okay. Are we done then?
I think so.
We'll head to random encounters.
Okay.
We take what we want and leave the rest. Just like your salad bar.
Nothing up my sleeve. Presto!
You will come out no more.
What? Huh? What'll come out no more?
Random encounters.
Random encounters. We are talking about our favorite critters from various magazines.
Yay.
This time we'll start with Liz.
Oh, man. Okay.
Haha, the teacher called on you.
Lynn LaKafka. I keep going back to Dragon because that's primarily the main gaming magazine I have read throughout my gaming career.
I mean, there's like 30 years or something like that of Dragon magazines. So.
Especially if you have the Dragon CD-ROM.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Lynn LaKafka did this one thing about animal skeletons.
Really?
And I cannot remember what issue it was in, but it was basically animal skeletons, and the article was something like, you know, monsters for low levels, you know, specifically, you know, new stuff for lower level players. And since Holmes is what I like to do, you know, 1 through 3 is usually how things go unless you start throwing in the brown books to level up higher. So, yeah, you had various types of skeletons, but instead of human skeletons, they were animal skeletons. And so you could get some, you know, different variants of attacks because the animal skeletons might still have, you know, their claws or bite attacks, you know, rather than, you know, the rusty sword and the shield.
Right.
So it was a neat little variant on the same old standard to kind of throw a loop into.
Yeah, rather than, oh, skeletons.
It's another skeleton.
Yeah.
Very nice.
It's like, oh my God, it's a saber-toothed tiger skeleton. You know, it's like, ah!
Or a horse skeleton. I mean, you could have some really interesting things happen there. Not only a horse skeleton, you could have a skeleton riding a skeleton.
Ouch.
You could have, you could have orc skeletons riding skeletons.
Ooh.
Skeleton.
Yeah.
But they'd have no trunks.
No, they could totally have trunks still. It's a fantasy game.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they were, okay.
Oh,
zombie! They could be riding zombie.
Oh, yeah. See, but that doesn't come up with
elephants.
Pun's not quite as good.
Ah, okay. Well, that's cool. Crispy?
Mine is from Oubliette number 6, and we talked about this on the show that we did the review of that. I don't know what number that is. Sorry, everyone.
It was episode...
episode...
We did a review of an Oubliette.
Yeah. We did Oubliette number 6.
Number 6.
I must not have been there.
The Skeleton Lord from the article Monster Club 9. And it's part of some expounded material on Animate Dead. And it's basically, it's a really high-level undead. It's a high-level
human. Is it basically a redo of the Skeleton Lord from Fiend Folio?
I think so, to an extent.
Okay.
It's a hit die. It's a 9+ hit die skeleton. And they're the raised skeletons of, like, evil fighters or undead fighters, you know?
Wow.
Okay, so sounds like a combination character then. So it's for those people who go, oh, look, a skeleton, yawn.
Yeah. It's the skeleton in, like, plate mail wielding a +2 two-handed sword.
This is the guy who'd be backing up a Death Knight.
Yeah, or... If you want to have high level undead, but you don't necessarily want to go for vampires and liches.
Yeah, I was actually going to say this sounds like a combination of the old Skeleton Lord and Death Knight.
As far as I know, I don't think they have any magical abilities, like being able to shoot fireballs or anything.
No 25 fireballs.
But it's like undead abilities, like does it have level drain or?
No, it doesn't. It's just a higher level.
So just plain fighting skeleton.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's but they have +2 plate mail and +2 two-handed swords.
Very nice.
Yeah.
And 9 hit die, as you know.
And 9 hit dice, yeah. So they're attacking as a 9+ monster.
Yow.
Which is, I mean, that's pretty good. If you throw a few of them at your 11th level party, they're like, oh, skeletons. Oh, what? Skeletons! Apparently that's my condescending party member voice.
Skeletons, dude. Deal with it.
He's got a million of them. DM Glenn.
Yes. Well, my favorite is kind of a, well, how shall I say this? Started off in a module, ended up in a Dragon article. I like the Rakasta. The Rakasta started with... the module for Thunder Rift, Rage of the Rakasta. That's where they introduced them. And then later on...
Didn't they have Rakasta in either Expert or Companion?
Rakasta, I believe, are actually from X1. They're the cat people, right?
Yeah.
Are we talking about the magic Indian demons cat people, or just the cat people?
No, this is not the Rakshasa.
Yeah, the Rakshasa.
This is just the cat people.
Yeah, in X1, there's a group of Rakasta.
That would be Expert, yeah. But hey, that's still a valid monster.
Oh,
yeah.
Because the first time I saw him was in Rage of the Rakasta. Rage of the Rakasta, and then they ended up with the creature catalog. And then they ended up late in second edition, Bruce Hurd, who was the guy who was spearheading the basic program at TSR and who wrote the Voyages of the Princess Ark, came up with the Rakasta for second edition.
Wasn't the creature catalog just... It was kind of like Monster Manual 2, where it was just a collection of different monsters that they used
for
maybe Dragon or different modules?
I call it the basic version of the Fiend Folio.
Yeah. Well, yeah that too.
Yeah. That and the RC, that's all I need to run right there for monsters.
Creature Catalog is a good book.
It is a great book.
Yeah, it's got some nifty stuff in it.
Yeah, but I really like the Rakasta, and I like the Rakasta from Basic, not the second edition where he broke it down to like, oh, these are tiger men, these are lion men, these are pooping men. I just like the basic tiger people.
Well, we'll let you get by with that, even though technically that wasn't in a magazine. So,
I'm just kidding.
Oh, well. But I like that they were portrayed as a kind of a quasi, quasi-Asian Oriental type race.
Yeah, they had those steel claws that they put over their own claws.
Oh, yeah.
That was their weapon of choice. I'm waiting for someone to say the Mind Flayer from Strategic Review number 1.
But mine does go back almost that far.
And the Rakasta are supposed to be the deadliest ninjas around.
Talk about another article I hated, the ninja.
Yeah, why is that in D&D, honestly? Come on.
Anyway, you were saying, Mike, what's yours?
Mine is from Dragon. Here we go to Dragon again. Number 35, Angels and Demons. I liked some of their versions of Angels, and come on, they give you the stats for Satan.
Ah, yeah, that's a good issue.
How can you not like that?
And it tells the story of why Asmodeus is the most
powerful. Yeah, it's in charge.
Yeah.
Satan got thrown out.
What issue is this again?
35.
Is this before he did the Politics of Hell?
I believe that's...
I think it was... Well, yes, it was.
Okay.
It was before Politics of Hell, I think.
Okay.
Either before or part of.
Yeah, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I haven't used them much. I've never used Satan, but you just got to have respect for a game that'll do that, even unofficially. It's always nice to know that if the PCs get too annoying, no matter how powerful they get, and even Asmodeus isn't tough enough, you know, he can always just throw out the big baddie himself. So that's my
thing. Yes. Slap him down and see what happens.
Exactly.
Now, let's see, do we get everybody here?
Yeah. Any other monsters we want to talk about before heading over to products?
I could talk. I mean, I almost said...
Magazine!
I know, but it's in a magazine. I almost said the Campestry, but that's second edition. The singing mushrooms?
Well, you
like
can't
them.
Use those in basic D&D, Glenn.
No, we can't. They're two completely different games.
They are just... You can't... They're two separate. It's like 4th edition and
it's like playing chess and Monopoly.
Yeah, like,
I mean, really. You just...
How dare you? You
indeed.
Your impudence.
Or Monopoly and Star Wars Monopoly.
Yeah, but there's always room for singing mushrooms. But anyway, I digress.
All I'm saying. Let's go to products of your imagination.
You really gotta look at that rest.
Your dungeon master has placed you in a dreadfully precarious position.
Where are the Cheetos?
They're right next to you.
Well, all you do is we play the characters we talked about earlier, and we run around and stuff.
I want to show you a trick Mother showed me when you weren't around.
Use your lightning bolt.
Victory is yours.
I'm attacking the darkness.
Dungeons and Dragons games. Products of your imagination.
You're not there. You're getting drunk.
Products of your imagination. No, I don't really.
Hello.
We're trying something a little different this time. We have technically already covered Oubliette Magazine. We covered it in issue 6.
Yes.
Now we're going to talk about issue 8. Because somebody brought up to me, and it's a valid point, unlike modules or, you know, games themselves, reviewing a particular issue of a magazine is a shot in time. It's that issue is good. So, if people like this sort of thing, we may go back and review other issues of magazines we've already covered, just to let you know if we think they're still good or if they've had a particularly bad issue or something.
I like to do it because it was going out for free.
I do like that Oubliette is free in the first, like, 2 weeks that it comes out. That's very good. More free stuff. Always.
Really? I was not aware that every issue is like that?
Oh, yeah. I have every issue of Oubliette magazine ever released.
Oh,
shut up. Get out of here.
I was not aware of that.
Yeah.
That is kind of cool.
It's, I mean, I felt really... This...
Now, you're not talking about peer-to-peer free, right?
No. I think I got half of them for free, but I had to buy the first one through three or something like that, which were good purchases. I don't mind at all. Issue 6 is really great. Issue 7 and issue 5 and 7 were also really, really good. Uh-huh. I just feel like this one is a little weaker than the other ones. And part of that for me is because there's a lot of focus on its New Land campaign. And I mean, I like the New Land campaign. I think it's actually very, very good. But uh-huh. I don't want to see half of a magazine devoted to it. And this one was a little, for me, a little light on content as well.
Yeah, I got to give you that too.
What do you think, Liz?
Since I haven't been reading a lot of the issues of Oubliette, I did not feel as though I was getting an overload of the Newland campaign-specific stuff. I was looking at the various articles from the perspective of, you know, hey, I could drop some of this into my own ongoing campaign. So... On that perspective, I didn't feel that so much.
It kind of had a sandboxy feel to it.
Yeah, I would say so. One of the things I did particularly like was, you know, they had something called Monster Club, which, you know, it's sort of a small bite of a trap or a room or whatever that you could just sort of drop into your own existing dungeon or adventure.
Those are always my favorite parts.
Of Random Encounter.
I think that's a really cool
idea. They're just
idea.
One room, yeah, with a trap that you can lay into any dungeon.
Okay.
But
that's cool. Glenn?
I just wanted to elaborate on that a bit. I mean, like, the Death Gate. And... you know, they've got another one in the meeting place. Things like that, where you can just, like, take this module and just dump in there, and you could either use it for whatever. It's kind of like the same way I like the one-page dungeons. We can use it as is, or you can use it as a hook for something else, something grander. And I love when they can do that.
Yeah. I guess in a way, though, that was why some of the campaign stuff kind of left me a little cold. I mean, I still think it's usable. It's sandboxy, but I can see where Crispy's talking to, because there's a lot of detail, especially on, say, the Bugbear and Ogre clans.
Uh-huh.
I'm just like, I don't need to know this much. You know, I'm going to probably make up my own rationale anyway. So, on the other hand, if people are being lazy and want something to just snap in, I suppose that's pretty useful, too.
I like the random bugbear sap content tool from
that was cool.
That.
You know, live baby axe beak, you know.
Those are always fun. And
yeah, like I don't know. I just feel like half this magazine, and it literally is about half this magazine, is Newland stuff.
And there was also that campaign
and,
world.
Like I really like
what was
the
that other
campaign.
One? The Lands of
Ara.
Arda or something?
Arda?
That was another campaign
I kind of skipped it over. They had the Rhodian, like a new player race
people.
That you can bring
in. I
liked
the Rhodians.
People. Yeah.
Me too.
I guess it's a personal bias. Anytime I see animal characters in like D&D, I just skip over it. I'm just not going to even pay attention to that because I don't think it fits my
my own personal campaign.
Well, it made me download their magazine anyway. I mean, it was basically a promo.
So that's what grabbed you?
Yeah.
Glenn?
Yeah, that and the modular stuff they put in there.
Mm-hmm.
I did like the Lands of Ara. I went on the site, got there, and it's a pretty good deal. Anyway, go ahead.
But I can agree. I just, you know, a lot of campaign fluff just doesn't grab me, so I can understand to a degree where Crispy's coming from on that, even though I haven't been reading. Or Crispy, you've read now basically all the issues of Oubliette, right? Right, so you've been more immersed in the series than we have.
Mm-hmm. One thing I have noticed that they are definitely doing a lot more ads as well, and that's I'm glad that they're getting recognition and people want to buy ad space. That's great, but I don't know. There's like a one page spread of just Oubliette, like old back issues, and I'm just like, man, that could have been used for something else.
Unless they didn't have anything to put there, I suppose.
I don't know. True.
I just know Liz used to do layout a lot. So.
Yeah, I'm not.
I will say when I was doing layout for Crusader Magazine, a lot of times when there was a blank spot, you know, the end of an article or something, and there wasn't anything to throw in there, a lot of times an ad would go into that blank spot to fill up the space. Because we had half page, quarter page, full page, you know, banner type going up and down, you know, one side of the page. You know, we had them in all shapes and sizes, and they could go just about anywhere.
I may be showing my grogginess on it, but one article in there I really liked was the Fanzine Frenzy.
You like that?
Yeah. I like that.
Cool. I saw that
being
as well.
Pointed out that there are still some quote-unquote fanzines out there. That Leviatar sounds interesting. Yeah, I mean,
I was just about to bring that up too. I like the ODU on the cover.
Yeah, well, I mean, the
and
whole idea.
Crawl. But it's
is that
DCC,
DCC,
and I don't know if I want to read a DCC. Yeah, well, not Loviatar.
Loviatar,
Loviator, whatever.
However you say that in Finnish.
Yeah, that one I think is just. There's a Crawl, which is for it's Dungeon Crawl Classics, but I have my own issues with Dungeon Crawl Classics where I just don't want to buy a D14, and, you know, Goodman Games for the last 10 years has just been like, hey, check out these game science guys that you only use for our modules.
I wish Goodman Games the best. I think they're a great guy. Joe Goodman's a great guy, but, you know, I just kind of, another fantasy RPG.
I loved his brother John in Roseanne.
Ha ha ha. A little humor hand grenade there. It took a few seconds. I don't know. Arachnophobia, he was cool.
Liz got it. Yeah, I just, like, when DCC was in its beta, I had read it, and it just put me off. The way it was written was just, we're going to play this hardcore. You're going to roll 3d6 down the back.
Oh, so they like was trying
man.
To hackmaster
like,
it?
No, I don't need this. Yeah, I just pushed the book away. I'm just like,
he wrote an
article
for Crusader Magazine called "How to Write Adventures That Don't Suck."
Oh, God.
And I don't know about anybody else, but my first gut reaction to that is, "Oh, really?" Because if I don't read your article, my adventures are going to suck, right? And I'm sure that's not what he meant, but. That was just a gut, that sort of in your face type talk, kind of.
And I hear DCC is good, so
absolutely.
People go ahead
people
and play DCC.
It.
It's just not for me.
I'd like it better if it's easily compatible to classic D&D. I don't know if it is. I don't know enough about it, frankly, though, from what you were talking about, obscure dice doesn't sound promising.
So let's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just
but
I hate that.
Anyway. I did like the fanzine article, and again, I like how they're doing reviews, say, in the back of, for instance, The Walking Dead, you know, that strictly speaking isn't D&D classic or otherwise, but it's something that nerds like.
But it's something
and
that nerds
while I found their equivocating of the of Grimes and his part group as a dungeon party interesting. I'm not sure I entirely buy into it, but it's an interesting way to look at the series.
Oh, yeah.
And I know I'm probably alone in it, but I liked the fiction, even though I'm a hypocrite and I don't actually read the fiction.
I skip it. It's the same thing with animal like races. I skip fiction.
Occasionally there's some gems. A lot of the time, you know, and it's certainly old school. Yeah, you know, old school mags, whether they were Dragon or White Dwarf or Imagine or whatever, used to have fiction in them every now and then.
The token,
some were good, a lot weren't.
They had a token fiction story in every magazine.
Particularly at the beginning.
Yeah.
Gardner Fox did a lot of stuff in early Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, some stuff. And, you know, it is old school. But, yeah, just I don't read it. But I like it being there. And I know it's hypocritical, but there it is.
It's kind
yeah,
of a
it just
hand,
feel
it goes
like a
hand
true
in hand with
gaming magazine. And
yeah, like I know the guy who does the fiction for Kobold Quarterly, Clinton Boomer. He writes about a goblin minion, and
well, that's great.
People really like his work, and I'm happy for him. Yeah,
it is?
He's a good guy, and he deserves the recognition.
What do you think about fiction?
Fiction is hit or miss with me. Sometimes if, you know, I'm in the mood for it, sometimes I'm not. And there are certain types of stories that are not particularly going to grab me. And, you know, maybe that's because I'm a girl. But a lot of the combat-heavy saga-type stories tend to leave me cold. Things that have more
Howard-esque.
Yeah, I've never been that big of a Howard fan, and that's going to cause gamers everywhere to you know, call for my stoning or something. But
Liz, you're a female gamer, and that's not going to happen.
Except the absolute misogynist.
Like,
so.
If anything,
yeah.
Yeah. If anything, they want to kill Mike.
Preferably behind behind an alley or something so you don't see my gruesome death.
I could never love anyone who would kill my Mikey.
Nah, I'll come down there and protect both of you.
Oh.
I need all the gamers I can get.
We'll throw Glenn in the direction of the stones.
Oh, no, you know, me in the front, Vince in the back. You guys are covered.
But Vince is gone.
Oh, I'm sure.
He'll come back.
He left us.
He left a silver bullet.
Never say the name.
Yeah, he'll again.
No one is ever dead for.
Yeah, it's classic D&D. We can get him resurrected pretty quick.
That's right.
Well, you know,
the only way out of the save and die
and even
then,
take his body back to the nearest town and get him resurrected, and he'll be back.
Yeah.
He'll be fine.
You know, whenever we need Vince, we go on the top of, you know, Mike and Liz's house and turn on the Vince signal. He'll see it and, you know.
What is the Vince signal exactly?
I think, I'll tell you after the show, okay?
Silhouette of 3D6.
That's exactly what he was thinking of.
Yes, it was. It was.
What did you guys think of that, the pad of OSR character sheets, that Indiegogo project.
I can't afford it, so.
Well, it's like $17 for two pads.
What would this be
one pad
for those
for
sad,
12.
Lonely people who aren't on Indie Press?
Okay, it's a basically, if you have ever seen the an OSR character sheet from like Labyrinth Lord or even D&D, like BX D&D, it's basically that character sheet. And instead of like a game logo as like the marquee, nice. It has a just OSR
too.
Character sheet.
Yeah,
they're
true
like
old school
pads,
is notebook paper 3x5.
Which cards. I mean, I have I have like 40 copies of the Labyrinth Lord character sheet that I'm not going to use anytime soon. So I'm going to pass on
new,
this. But
what's that other
Kickstarter?
Is that like
I think it's been around longer actually. than Kickstar.
Okay.
It's similar. It's like a crowdsourcing
tool
where you can drum up support and stuff like that. I'm not. I think it works pretty much the same way. I'm not too keen on the details. And then after that is a the What's in the Oubliette, where that has like the Walking Dead and review and stuff like that. It's got a random dungeon generator as a dungeon map poster. Yeah, that is really cool.
How much?
I want one of these, but it's $15.
That's not bad for a poster.
$15. It's a...
Yeah.
It's 24 by 36.
Which
is really big.
Great for your game room.
You know, it's a dungeon generator.
I would actually have been more interested in his Wandering Monsters one, but...
Or...
I think... Yeah, that's what the article was saying, that... That
did
was
he have
his,
one of those?
His last project he did before this one. It did a Wandering Monster one, and I was like, ooh, that would be cool. But I don't know if it's available or not anymore. So, I think it was.
I don't know. If it was a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I think he was saying that in the article.
We might have missed.
So,
We've
looked at 8. We looked at 6. Glenn, how many dragons?
I give it 3. Right down the middle.
3.
It's got a couple things that are of use to me.
Okay. Crispy.
I'm gonna give it a 4. It's got Newland stuff, and I know it sounds like I'm complaining about it, but I really do like the Newland campaign setting, and I feel like if I was ever gonna run something in that, there's a wealth of material there that I could use. And other than that, I mean, there was a lot of stuff in this that is very usable and
Liz?
Very informative. So I'm gonna go ahead.
I
yeah, 4.
Give it a 4.5.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I do want to say, I remember when we were looking at issue 6, and I had talked about some of their comic strips, Tales from Hell with the Gauls, and I was kind of disappointed not to see Tales from Hell in issue number 8.
That's...
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I was sad about. And the Mouse Watch comic was just like a splat page.
That ad for Black Issues half a page, they would have had room for the Tales from Hell, see?
Their other one, Goblin Quest. I remember specifically talking about Goblin Quest, and I had mentioned that, you know, I liked the idea of it, and it was a fun read, but that the art panels in the issue 6 one seemed a little too crowded and a little too busy. Looking at Goblin Quest here in issue 8, they've really gotten away from that. It's got a better layout. You've still got a lot going on, but you have a better flow of action. It's easier to read. I think that the art has, you know, the artist is, you know, getting the feel of doing the comic strip at this point, and it's looking really nice. Yeah.
They also gave him a lot more room.
This was a
full two-page comic.
Very nice.
All right, well, I'm going to give it a 4.
This time around. Yeah.
Oh?
Yeah.
Why?
I wasn't perfect, but there was a lot of good stuff I could use in here. I found some of the campaign data a little tedious, but that's me. I know that there are more gamers who like that than that are like me and actually think less is more. But... there's still plenty of stuff to use here. There's the monster clubs, like Liz was talking about. Even those ogre and bugbear tribes, you know, you could pretty much just pick them up and drop them into any forest at need. I was a little disappointed because a lot of the campaign stuff for that forest, they were saying, you know, and the stats for blah, which will be an Oubliette 9.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that doesn't do me much good, does it?
Not right
I
now.
I mean... Yeah, I mean, if you're going to add this, give me all the data for that particular area. Leave some of these other tribes off, maybe, until Oubliette 9, if you're going to do that. But that's a minor gripe. On the whole, I still think it's a really good mag. And I'd subscribe to it. So,
okay.
4. And that totals out to something.
3.5, maybe. 4. 4.5.
3.75, I think.
Yeah.
Something like
that. Yeah, we'll say 3.75.
Think about that like 3.75,
right.
Maybe.
You can tell none of us are really math majors.
No.
So have we beaten this dead equine enough?
I think so.
And
time to go.
We're
Off on the Lonely Road.
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
See Bill Bixby in the distance. Hello.
Hi. How you doing?
Are you heading down the road, Glenn?
I am heading down the road watching the Ricosta teaching the Campestri how to sing.
And Crispy? You're just going to walk down the road. Trying to avoid Newland.
I'm just going to walk down the road. Yeah.
Newland!
Yeah.
No, I'm hanging out with my bounty hunter.
It's good.
Liz?
Okay.
I am being carried through the air by a couple of the winged folk.
Woohoo! Whoa. And with that, we'll let you go from another episode of Save or Die.
Can you make the save? Good night, everybody! Sorry. Go.
Free art.
Woo!